Okay, welcome back to Melachim Aleph. So very interesting perek we have here. It's actually a very famous perek. Very famous perek, at least part of the story is very famous. The part of the story that we're going to learn tonight is the part where Shlomo HaMelech asks for wisdom. That's a very famous request of Shlomo. Everybody knows that Shlomo was the wisest of all men. So that's something that's well known. The other well-known piece of this perek, which we're not going to get to tonight, that's the second half of the perek, is the story with the two women and the baby, right? So that's also a famous story of Shlomo HaMelech, but we'll get to that, Mirtz Hashem, next week. Okay, but this week let's begin with the beginning of perek Gimel. Okay, the perek Gimel begins in a very interesting way with Shlomo getting married, right? So it sounds like it's a big simcha. Shlomo's getting married. Now, if you remember at the end of Perek Beis was essentially all about Shlomo HaMelech solidifying his reign in Bnei Yisrael, right? Solidifying his reign and, essentially killing out or having them killed all the people that might be threats to him, the people that were not loyal to David, and there might be threats to Shlomo as well. So he kind of solidified his reign in among Bnei Yisrael. And now, time to get married. Pasuk says, Pasuk Aleph, Vayischatein Shlomo es Paro Melech Mitzrayim, Vayikach es Bas Paro. So what does he do? He gets married to who? Bas Paro, a nice Egyptian girl. A nice Egyptian girl. The daughter of Paro. But he marries into Paro's family. That's what the Pasuk means in the beginning. So he marries Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro. Vayivyeha el Ir David. And he brings her to Ir David, at the city of David, which is, of course, this part of Yerushalayim, the part that David conquered and made his own. Now Shlomo HaMelech lives there. Ad kalo so livnos es beiso v'es beis Hashem v'es chomas Yerushalayim soviv. And he basically kept her there until the point that he was able to finish building beiso, his own palace, v'es beis Hashem, and the home of Hashem, which refers, of course, to the Beis HaMikdash, which we will learn about. We know that he builds the Beis HaMikdash. Yes, Chomas Yerushalayim Saviv, and the wall of Yerushalayim surrounding, and the wall that surrounds Yerushalayim. Okay. Now, this happened, it's interesting. We'll start with the end of the Pasuk. So the Radak says, first of all, why is it? Well, okay, let's start from the end of the Pasuk and then we'll work our way backwards. At the end of the Pasuk, it says that he kept her in Ir David, which, by the way, interestingly, the Radak says is called Tzion. Now, Tzion is a term that appears many times in Tanakh and, of course, in rabbinic literature as well. What does Tzion mean? So normally, when we say Tzion, what do we think of?
Yerushalayim.
Do we? Herb thinks of Yerushalayim. Israel as a whole. Israel as a whole. So there's a machlokes in this holy class if Tzion refers to Yerushalayim or Israel as a whole. So the truth is, you're both correct. Because sometimes Tzion is used in reference to Yerushalayim alone, and sometimes Tzion is used in reference to Eretz Yisrael as a whole. In this context, the Radak is referring to Tzion as Yerushalayim specifically, because that's where he brought her. And he brought her and he put her in, he kept her in Ir David. That's where she lived. Now it's interesting. He built her a house at some point, right? First we talk about the fact that he built his own house. He built the Beis HaMikdash. The truth is he built the Beis HaMikdash first. The Radak points out that it took him 7 years to build the Beis HaMikdash and then 13 years to build his house. I don't know if it was 13 total years or another 13 years. I'm not sure, but it took him a while to get all this done. Once this was all done, the Pasuk says he built her a house, or he does, the Pasuk actually doesn't say that, but the Mefarshim say that he built her a house for herself, and he kept her in this house. That's where she lived. Now, why did he move her out of Yerushalayim, out of Ir David, so to speak? So once he built the Beis HaMikdash, so then the Aron was brought, of course, to the Beis HaMikdash. So once the Aron is in Ir David, he felt that it wasn't appropriate to have his wife. His wife, was especially because she was Bas Paro, perhaps, but his wife, permanently in Ir David, in the same place as the Holy Aron, and therefore he kind of relocated her to a different place. Oh, very good. So what's going on here? Very strange thing, right? He's getting married. He's getting married to Bas Paro. You know, we would have thought a nice shidduch. You know, maybe he marries a girl from, you know, he lives in Yerushalayim. Married a girl from Bnei Brak. You know, Be'er Sheva. He's marrying a girl from Mitzrayim. You know, of all places, Mitzrayim. So the Malbim says that this was a strategic marriage. Why? Because in Perek Beis, Shlomo just finished solidifying his kingdom internally among all the Jews, right? By killing out all the detractors and all the people that could threaten him. That was his job, to solidify his kingdom internally. Now he wants to solidify his kingdom externally. So he looks at the surrounding nations and he says, okay, how can I establish and solidify my kingdom and not be threatened by the surrounding nations? Very simple. Make an alliance. What sort of alliance? What better alliance than family, mishpacha? So he marries the daughter of Paro. Paro, now he's got an ally, this big ally to the southwest of Eretz Yisrael, so to speak. He's got a big ally now. And now he's not going to be threatened by this country. And the Malbim says that this is really part of his intention. We know that Shlomo HaMelech married many, many wives. In fact, we learn in several prakim, we're going to learn that he married too many wives, and they ended up leading him astray. We'll learn about that as well. But this was many of these marriages for Shlomo were strategic. It wasn't just that he wanted to marry a lot of women. You know, he had a desire and a lust. I'm sorry?
Is it the maximum 18?
Correct.
So he married more than 18?
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, good question. Is that a lack of bitachon? Good question. I mean, listen, this is the old question of where does hishtadlus end and bitachon begin? Hard to know. So he felt that this was within the realm of hishtadlus and not bitachon. Was he wrong? I mean, this did lead him astray. We'll see in a moment that Chazal do not look favorably upon this marriage. It's not clear in the Pesukim that way, but certainly Chazal did not have a very positive outlook on this marriage. In fact, the Gemara says, there are two Gemaras that talk about how bad this marriage was, and the Mefarshim talk about them. But one is the Gemara Brachos on Daf Ches. The Gemara says, La'olam, and now the, just as an introduction to this Gemara, Shlomo HaMelech was a Talmud of Shimi ben Gera. As strange as that sounds, because Shimi ben Gera, we know, had a somewhat of a rocky relationship with David and with Shlomo, right? But Shlomo was a Talmud of Shimi ben Gera. Okay? Now, says the Gemara, that what do you see from the fact that this story comes right after the story of Shimi ben Gera, when Shimi ben Gera was killed, right? He waited for him to die in order to marry Bas Paro. Why? Says the Gemara, she calls man Shimi ben Gera kayam lo nasa Shlomo es Bas Paro. He didn't do it as long as Shimi ben Gera was alive, right? Because he was his Rebbe, and he was a little embarrassed, meaning he felt that this was something he had to do. He wasn't very, sounds like he wasn't very proud of it. He wasn't happy about it, but he felt like he had to do it, and he was too embarrassed to do it in front of his Rebbe. When his Rebbe died, this was now the opportunity to do this thing that he felt he had to do. Hold on one second. So the Gemara says an interesting thing based on this idea. La'olam yadur adam b'makom rabo. A person should always live where their Rebbe lives. Why? Because then they'll be embarrassed, right? There's a certain expectation. Your Rebbe's around, he sees you, he's watching you. You have to act in a certain way, you know? But once we move away from our Rebbeim, I mean, I'm not one to talk. Many of my Rebbeim live in Baltimore, right, or elsewhere, you know? So once we move away from our Rebbeim, they don't see us on a daily basis. They don't know exactly what's going on. We don't live with that fear or, you know, awe or expectation that, hey, I better watch what I'm doing, or watch, you know, how I'm acting because my Rebbe's watching me, right? And there's a certain expectation of how I'm going to behave and how I'm going to speak and how I'm going to act, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one interesting lesson that the Gemara gives us based on this story. He was too embarrassed to do this in Shimi's lifetime. A person should always have a little bit of embarrassment by living near their Rebbe. Yeah. He didn't kill him. He had him killed.
Same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, it does make it a little bit worse than the fact that it was his Rebbe, correct? But again, keep in mind, he didn't do this on his own, right? He did this at the behest of David. David encouraged him to do all these things, and he was essentially following his father's orders. And remember, Shimi did not act very properly towards David. So although it's true that he may have been his son's Rebbe, you know, and maybe he paid his tuition or whatever the case might be, but at the same time, you know, he was responsible for the things that he did, and he did certain things wrong.
PTA meetings didn't go so well.
PTA meetings did not go so well. That's right. Oh, that's a good question. Can we assume they converted? So hold on. Now, there's another Gemara. Before we get to the conversion question, there's another Gemara in Shabbos, which is also clear that this was not such a good thing. Because the Gemara says in Shabbos, on Daf Nun Vav, that when Shlomo married Bas Paro, she showed up with a truckload of instruments. Now, what was the purpose of all these instruments? So she said, Kach osin la'avodah zara plonis. Kach osin la'avodah zara plonis. She showed him all the instruments and she said, this is the song you play for this avodah zara. And this is the song you play for that avodah zara. And says the Gemara, Velo micha ba. Shlomo did not protest. He didn't protest. He kind of let her be. She had a past. She had a history. She grew up with avodah zara. She certainly did not denounce the whole thing according to this approach in Chazal. And Shlomo kind of let it be. He turned the other way. He turned a blind eye to his wife's avodah zara practices. Also true. Also true. Could very well be that he built her a separate house because of this. So this was obviously something not good. A very bad example. Correct. And the Gemara there continues that when this happened, when he married Bas Paro, Yorad Gavriel v'no'at kona bayom. Gavriel came down and stuck a reed into the sea, the olabo sirton, and mud, dirt, started to form around this reed. The olav nivne krach gadol shel Romi. And that was going to be the basis of where Rome developed from. And Rome was eventually on that spot. So what's the connection? Connection is that we see that this decision of Shlomo had repercussions and eventually led him astray, led others astray, and eventually down the line with the ripple effect, would lead to Rome, which is, of course, a source of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo himself would build. So it's almost like a tragic cycle of events here. But Shlomo HaMelech is at the outset, even before he builds the Beis HaMikdash, is almost sowing the seeds of its destruction. Now again, not to say that he was solely responsible for its destruction. Of course, we know that Bnei Yisrael did plenty of things wrong and they were responsible also. But definitely there was something sown spiritually. There was something sown here. There's some seeds sown that were not good. Now, the question was asked, what about, did she convert? Did she convert? So there's some say that the Gemara in Yevamos, there's the Gemara in Yevamos that discusses this at length. And there's an approach in the Gemara that she did convert. Now there's two problems with saying she converted. Number one, the Gemara says that in the days of David and Shlomo, they did not accept converts. They didn't accept converts. Now, who didn't accept converts? So the Rambam in Hilchos Yisurei Bia elaborates on this and says that essentially, by the way, I found much of this information I found in the bottom of the article. Fascinating stuff there, but you'll check it out. But the Rambam in Hilchos Yisurei Bia says that Basin, meaning the Sanhedrin, did not accept converts. The Sanhedrin did not accept converts at that time. Why? Why would a Sanhedrin not accept converts? We love converts. The Torah tells us we're supposed to love converts. So why would the Sanhedrin not accept converts? Correct? Oh. The only reason to not accept converts is if we feel they're doing it for the wrong reasons. That's the only reason not to accept converts. So in the times of David, the Rambam says, that we were afraid David was very powerful. So we were afraid that maybe people who wanted to convert to Judaism at that time were doing it because they were afraid. They didn't want to be conquered, enslaved, subjugated by David and his armies. So maybe that's why they converted. In the times of Shlomo, we're going to learn more, it was a very wonderful time for Bnei Yisrael. It was a prosperous time. So maybe we're worried that maybe the non-Jews wanted to convert at that time because, hey, look how good the Jews have it. Let's convert to Judaism and we'll have it good as well. So that's why in the times of David and Shlomo, they did not accept converts. So this is one problem with saying that that she converted is that, number one, they did not accept converts. Now, the Rambam also points out that although the Sanhedrin did not accept converts, but many other Batei Din, or maybe even individuals, I mean, you have to be a Beis Din to accept conversion, but they did conversions. And the Beis Din did not stop them. The Beis Din did not stop them. They knew what was going on, and they didn't stop them. But nevertheless, they didn't consider them to be full-fledged converts. So this is one of the problems. And according to some, oh, okay. So the second problem is that even if she did convert, we know the Torah tells us that even if an Egyptian converts, they're not allowed to marry into the Jewish people until the third generation, right? But certainly the first generation of a convert, they're not allowed to marry into the Jewish people, okay? So how do you have this woman converting and marrying David and marrying Shlomo? How can he marry her? Even if she did convert, he's not allowed to marry her. So that's also one of the questions that the Gemara and the Mefarshim discuss. Sir?
Yeah,
they can marry another convert. Right? They just can't marry a regular Jew from birth until the third generation. With different nations, the Torah tells us, you know, different lengths of time that they have to wait. Many converts can marry into the Jewish people as soon as they convert. But certain nations that were that mistreated the Jewish people, you know, terribly throughout Tanakh, such as Mitzrayim, Ammon and Moab, etc., those nations, there are restrictions, you know, as to how long they, how many generations they have to wait until they convert. I'm sorry, until they marry into the Jewish people.
Question.
Yeah.
I thought that you're not allowed to convert if the sole purpose is to marry a Jew.
So that's correct. That's correct. Because again, we assume that if the sole purpose is to marry, so then the conversion is not sincere. Mm-hmm. Conversion means that you believe in Hashem and you're accepting upon yourself all the mitzvot, et cetera, et cetera. So we assume that the conversion is not sincere. But when we say that, we're essentially saying that if someone comes to us and says, hey, I met this nice Jewish boy and I'd like to convert. So then we, you know, push them away and we say, thank you, but no thank you, because we assume that their conversion is because they want to marry this person. But if we can somehow figure out that it's legitimate, right? And there are cases, right? I know of a case where a couple met, Jewish man met a non-Jewish woman. I think they met in school. She ended up converting, and she lives like a frum woman. Shomer Shabbos.
How could that be?
Probably frummer than many other people that we know, right?
How could that be?
Now, again, she may not have done that had she not met this guy. That's possible. But at the end of the day, the conversion, I didn't convert her, but at the end of the day, the Beis Din that converted her said, this is a legitimate conversion. You know, she's sincere. I mean, you could see years later, she's still with it and she's observant. She's raising her children, yeshiva education, everything that works, right? So she obviously was sincere. And they believed, you know, that they trusted that she believes in Hashem and she's sincere and she accepted upon herself the yoke of mitzvos. So if that's the case, then she can convert, right? So when we say that, there's no prohibition against converting someone who wants to marry a Jew. The problem is that we assume it's not sincere. But if we determine that it is sincere, analyze the circumstances. If we determine that it is sincere and it's not just to get married, right? But this person really wants, they see the beauty in the Jewish lifestyle and Judaism, and they want to, you know, they want to join the Jewish people and they believe in Hashem, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's no reason not to accept them, you know, if that's the case. Yeah. Maybe he would be allowed to because of these political considerations. Maybe.
What's the name of Paro's daughter?
We don't know the name. Yeah, I mean, this is really the only pasuk that that discusses her per se.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So the Radak.
I have a question. I don't recall. Was Batsheva Jewish?
Batsheva, yeah, sure.
She was Jewish.
Yeah. She was not a convert. She was Jewish. Yeah. So the Radak quotes the Gemara, and the Gemara, you know, offers some possibilities. Although at the end of the day, the Mefarsha point out the Gemara does not conclude that this is okay, like any of these possibilities. But some suggest that after they convert, they are allowed to marry. Some say when we prohibit Egyptian converts from marrying, that's only the males, not the females. But Egyptian women are okay. But again, it doesn't seem that we paskin like any of these suggestions. And at the end of the day, it seems to be problematic. It seems to be problematic. Now the Radak in the next or a couple of psukim later essentially says that although he says at first I think that she probably converted, but then again he raises this problem that even if she converted, how could he marry her? He suggests this, the fact that some say the pasuk says banim and not banos, so maybe the Egyptian women are okay. He says, although we don't, the halacha is not like that. We don't find that the halacha is like this. But he says at the same time, we don't find that Shlomo was criticized for this, really. I mean, we find that his wives led him astray and things like that. That we do find. But we don't find that he's explicitly criticized for marrying this Egyptian girl, which is strange. Because if it was really wrong and it was usher, then we should find, I mean, we have Shaul's criticized for doing things wrong. David is criticized for doing things wrong. So how come Shlomo is not criticized for marrying an Egyptian girl if he did it improperly? The Gemara does give a suggestion that maybe he did not marry her. Maybe he did not marry her. And maybe he just loved her. He loved her, but he didn't marry her. And it says, Vayischatein, because he loved her, to, you know, the amount that a person would love his wife. That's how much he loved this woman. But he didn't marry her because it was Aser. That's what some suggest. Correct. But that's on the books. That's in the Gemara that's the case. We don't find that with Mitzrayim. We don't find that with Mitzrayim. And some say that he, you know, he married her and he married all these other women, but he did not convert them and he allowed them to remain. And that seems to be the implication of the Gemara that I read to you in Shabbos, that he allowed them to, you know, remain not Jewish and retain their connection to Avodah Zarah, and that's what eventually led him astray, as we'll learn in a bunch of prakim, that would influence him later on and cause him to go astray. Okay, so this is a complicated marriage / conversion / maybe not. It's a complicated parsha, but we do find that he did it, that he married, or you know, it seems to be that he married this woman, and it does not turn out great. It does not turn out great. Okay. Continues the Navi. Let's read Pasuk Beis. I know that was a lot in Pasuk Aleph, but there's a lot to talk about. Pasuk Beis. Raka mezabchim babamos kilo nivna bayis l'shem Hashem ad hayomim hahem. So the Pasuk says that the nation, and it says Rak, only the nation, only the nation, where'd they bring karbanos? On bamos. Now, what were bamos? Bamos were, I mean, a bama literally is a high place. But it means a mizbeach. It means like an altar. Now, these were private altars, right? These were private mizbechos, private altars. And these were bamos that they would build wherever, okay? And the reason why this was okay is because from the time that Shiloh was destroyed, And we know right now the Mishkan's not in Shiloh anymore. The Mishkan at first was in Shiloh, and then it was moved to Nov, and then to Giv. Now it's in Givah. That's where it is right now. Even though the Aron we know is in Yerushalayim, but the Mishkan and the Mizbeach are still in Givah right now. So once Shiloh was destroyed, there was a Heter Bamos, Chazal said, that people were permitted to build their own private Mizbeach, private altars, and bring Karbonos on these private altars. Now this was not something bad, right? This was L'shem Shamayim. People were bringing real Karbonos to Hashem. This was something positive. It was something good. And that's what the people were doing. As the Pasuk says, Kilo nivne ba'is l'shem Hashem ala yom imayim. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash yet. And although we have a Mishkan, but the Mishkan is kind of in exile. It's not it's not the same Mishkan that we had in Shiloh, where everybody went to Davin. Here we have the Aron in one place, the Mishkan's in another place. You know, it's kind of like haphazard at this point. Now, the Metzudas David picks up on the fact that it says Raka'ah, only the nation. They were the only ones who sacrificed on these Mizbechos, on these Bamos. Why? Because David, it says, Shlomo's father, of course, David, only brought Karbanos on what's called the Bama Gedola, which was still in Givon, the Mizbeach, which was still in Givon. And this, the Mefarshim say, is referring to the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the copper Mizbeach, right, that was used. So this, that was used in the Mishkan, and that was still there. That's called the Bama Gedola. That's still there. And that's the only Mizbeach that David used. He did not make any private altars. He only used that Mizbeach. There was one other Mizbeach, he says, perhaps, that he also used the Mizbeach in Yerushalayim that was next to the Aron. But that was it. Right? He didn't make any other Mizbechos any other places. Other people, they can make a Mizbeach. They can make a Bama in their backyard. Right? And bring Karbanos. But he didn't do that. Why? Because David felt that having too many Mizbechos in different places, it doesn't feel right. It feels a little bit like Avodah Zarah. And it's not an Avodah Zarah. And these people were not worshiping Avodah Zarah. They're worshiping Hashem. But it didn't sit right with David. And that's why he said, I'm only bringing him a Karbanos on the Mizbeach, either the one in Givon, next to the Mishkan, or a Mizbeach in Yerushalayim next to the Aron, but that's it. I'm not bringing anything else. And Shlomo followed in his father's footsteps in that way. Pasuk Gimel, Vayehav Shlomo es Hashem lalechas b'chukos David Aviv. Shlomo loved Hashem and he followed in the ways of David his father. Rak babamos u'mizabeach u'machtir. And he only served on these bamos. Now again, according to many of the Mefarshim, according to some of the Mefarshim, this was a praise of Shlomo. Right? This pasuk is saying something good about Shlomo, which it sounds like, Vayehav Shlomo es Hashem. Shlomo loved Hashem. Right? So it sounds like it's praising him. And that's what the Radak says. He served Hashem out of love. And even though he married the daughter of Paro, you would think that she would make him go astray. Says the Radak, that didn't happen yet. Still, he was very strong until later in life when he got older, then his wives, you know, led him astray. But right now, he's good. Right now, he's strong and he's not being led astray. And he loves Hashem. And this is something positive. And the Metzudas David says that Rak Babamos Hu Mizabeach Hu Maktir is saying that in this way, he did not follow in David's footsteps. David only brought, everybody else brought on all the Bamos. David only brought in the Bama Gedola in the Mishkan or by the Aron. Says the Metzudas David, when it came to Shlomo, he didn't follow in that way. He did what everybody else did. And he sacrificed on, you know, different Bamos, wherever he was. He would build an altar, he'd build a Mizbeach, and bring sacrifices, bring Karbanos. And that's what he did. So already it's saying something slightly negative about Shlomo. Rashi understands that this is actually a further critique of Shlomo, that Shlomo actually delayed building the Beis HaMikdash for 4 years unnecessarily. He could have built the Beis HaMikdash already, but he delayed for 4 years. And Rashi says this is giving him a critique, that he was still bringing Karbanos on the Bamos when he could have built the Beis HaMikdash. So this, according to Rashi, this is a patch. This is a critique of Shlomo that he did something wrong by delaying the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Pasuk Dalet, Vayelech HaMelech Givona Lizboach Shom, Ki Hi Abama HaGedola. And he went to Givon. Givon again was that was where the Mishkan was, right? That was where the Mishkan was. And this was the big Kapper Mizbeach that Moshe had made in the Midbar, brought to Shiloh, brought to Nov, then brought to Givon. Again, like we said, that's where David brought all of his Karbanos here. In this case, Shlomo came to this Mizbeach to bring karbanos. And by the way, it's called the Bama Gedola not because it was physically larger than any of the other bamos. It's because of its significance, right? Gedola means in terms of significance and chashivus. But he went to Givon and he brought 1,000 olos. It's a lot of karbanos. 1,000 olos he brought before coming back to Yerushalayim. Now, while in Givon, here we have this famous exchange between Shlomo and Hashem. Pasuk Hey, beGivon nira Hashem el Shlomo b'chalom halayla. So in Givon, Shlomo stays overnight. He falls asleep, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him in a dream at night. Vayomer Elokim sha'al ma'etein lach. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Shlomo, "Nu, my son, ask for something. I'll give it to you." Vayomer Shlomo pasuk vav. Shlomo says, and of course this is in his dream, "Ata asita im avdecha David avi chesed gadol. You did tremendous chesed with my father David." Says the Mitzvah David, what's the chesed? He took him from being a lowly shepherd and you made him into the king of Israel. Unbelievable. And the reason why you did that to him is because he was such a righteous person. He was such a tzaddik. He walked with you in truth, charity, straightness of heart. And you guarded this kingdom from all the other enemies that wanted to wage war with him and steal it from him. You guarded the kingdom from them. Atitan Lovain, Yoshev Al Kisto, Kayomazeh. And you gave him a son, me, that I'm continuing this legacy and sitting on his throne. Unbelievable. Chesed that you've done. Pasuk Zayin, Viata Hashem Elokai, Ata Himlachta Es Avdecha, Tachas David Avi. And you now, Hashem, have made me the king, right? To take over my father's throne. The Anochi Na'ar Katon, Lo Eidat Seis Vavo. But I'm a young kid. I don't really know how to lead, right? Seis Vavo is the reference to the pasuk that the Melech goes out with the people, comes in with the people. I don't really know how to lead these people, right? How old is he? Oh.
He was 12.
So Rashi says he was 12 years old at this point. He was 12 years old when he became king. Okay, so this sounds like he's still 12. You know, the Mefarshim say that the Psukim here may not be in order, and this may have been before the 4 years, but he was 12 years old. And Rashi does the whole Cheshbon here, and the Radak does the whole Cheshbon that they figure out. They confirm. I mean, Chazal tells us he was 12, and they confirm based on their math and the Psukim that he was actually only 12 years old. So he's saying, I'm a 12-year-old kid. I mean, think about it, 12 years old, that's wild, right? To become the king, 12 years old. He says, I don't know how to lead.
Why is the word
she'ela used instead of bakasha? You're saying in Pasuk Hey, when Hashem says she'al ma'atein lach? Bakesh, it should say bakesh.
Okay, but like when we were doing the
Megillah,
we said,
yeah. Masha Elasech, Umabakasha Sech. Akasha is a stronger form of asking, almost like demanding.
But it's a dream, so it's not.
Or Hashem was ready to give it to him, so he didn't need to ask in such a strong way. And Hashem was ready to go, like just, you know, Sha'al.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
Right. It's a stronger language. I'm not sure. I don't know what the Malbim says on this word. I have to look. I'm not sure. Okay. But that's what, yeah. Yeah. That's what he says. I don't know how to lead. Right? I need your help. I don't know how to lead. Pasuk Ches. The Avdecha B'soch Amcha. Asher Bacharta Am Rav. And he says, I'm among your people. This is a big nation, a great nation. Asher lo yimanev lo yisofer merov. There's so many people, right? I can't even count all these people. There's so many Jews. Says the Mitzvah David. David is saying, Shlomo is saying, I need wisdom to guide these people, to lead this nation, to lead this great nation. I need wisdom. I need a lot of chachma. Pasuk Tes, v'nasata li'avdecha lev shomea. So what does Shlomo HaMelech ask for? A lev shomea. Interesting language, right? I want a heart that listens. Lishbot es amcha. to be able to judge your nation, lehavin bein tov lera, to distinguish, to understand the difference between good and bad. Ki mi yuchal lishpot es amcha hakoved azeh. Who can judge this heavy nation? Who can judge this heavy nation? Now, what's the heaviness? So Rashi says two possible explanations. Number one, there's a lot of people, as he just said in the previous pasuk, Am Rav. There's a lot of people. A lot of people means a lot of cases. I don't have so much time to give the proper thought and to think about each of these cases and to give it the proper time that I need. That's the kvedus. That's the heaviness that he was referring to. Also says Rashi, there's a certain severity with these cases. If I judge incorrectly, who's punished? I'm the one who's going to get punished. If I judge that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000 and I'm wrong, that's on me. Right? So there's a certain weight that's on my shoulders, says Shlomo. This is a heavy thing. This is a heavy matter. I can't do this without your help. There's no way I could do this by myself, right? To be able to judge all of this properly. Also, just the language is beautiful. Lev Shomea, he's asking for. Lev Shomea, Lishpot es Amcha. Right? In order to understand, you have to first listen. You have to be able to listen and to absorb and to process and to understand. Pasuk Yud, Vayita v'adavar be'enei Hashem. Kisho al Shlomo es hadavar hazeh. Shlomo says, what a beautiful request. That's what he wants. What a beautiful request. Vayomer, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Elokim, Eilov, Yana shesha'alta es hadavar hazeh. Because you asked for this, you asked for chachma. You didn't ask for long life. You didn't ask for wealth. You didn't ask to defeat your enemies. Those are things that a lot of kings would have asked for. You didn't ask for any of that. None of those things. You just asked for wisdom. To understand and to be able to judge properly. That's what you asked for. Oh, of course I'm going to grant you this request, says Hashem. I'm going to give you a wise and understanding heart, says the Radak Chacham, that he was able to remember and retain everything he learned. Navon, Binas Davar, Mavin Davar Mitov Davar, he was able to take the knowledge that he learned and apply it to new cases. And Asher Kamocha Lohaya Lefanecha, there's no one before you that was ever like this, to be so Chacham Vinavon. And there won't be anyone after you. You're going to be the wisest of all men. Nope. Moshe was very wise. Moshe was out of Mikol Adam. He had other strengths. So again, this may have been before the delay. According to Rashi, that there was a delay. This may have been before the delay. Say, why did Hashem even ask him? Yeah. Why did Hashem come to him and ask him? Sha'alma. Right? Right. Maybe. Yeah, maybe because he was younger and he felt like he realized he needed the help. Maybe. Pasuk Yud Gimel, v'gam asher lo sha'alta, nasati loch. But he says, but also all the things that you didn't ask for, I'm going to give you anyway. Right? Because you asked for the right thing, I'm going to give you everything, all the brachas. Gam osher, gam kavod, I'm going to give you wealth and honor. Asher lo haya kamocha ish b'melachim kol yamecha. There won't be anybody like you. No king is going to be like you in terms of your stature of wealth and honor, besides for the chachma, besides for the wisdom. I'm going to give you all of these things. Says the Radak, because it says there won't be any king like you. Says the Radak, certainly kavachomer, there won't be any regular citizen like you. Of course. And the Kol Yamecha, the Metzudas Tavod has two approaches. The Kol Yamecha either means that his entire life, he'll be wealthy and honorable his entire life. He'll never lose his wealth or honor. Or during your lifetime, you'll be the greatest king in terms of wealth and honor. After you die, there might be others, right? The previous pasuk says, when it comes to wisdom, there was no one. No one would be like him when it comes to wisdom. But when it comes to wealth and honor, according to the Metzudas Tavod, one approach, that during your lifetime you'll be the wealthiest and the most honorable king. After you die, maybe somebody else will be greater than that.
Why do you need the word God twice? Just
Gam, gam osher, gam kavod. Yeah. Gam osher ever kavod. I hear. I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah. Pasuk Yedalid. Vim teleich midrachai lishmor chukai umitzvosai. And if you follow in my ways, says Hashem, and you follow my mitzvos, kasher holach David avicha, just like David your father did, v'harachti es yamecha, I will give you long days as well. Arichas yamim, yeah, arichas yamim. Now, the Rashi points out that he feels that this arichas yamim is really referring to arichas yamim of the Osher V'Kavo that we talked about before. Because Arichas Yomim of the Malucha, that's already promised in the Torah, V'arachto Yomim al Amamlachtecha. Right? So already he has a promise that it'll have Arichas, that his Malchus, that his kingdom, will have Arichas Yomim. This is the Arichas Yomim of the Osher V'Kavo that was just promised to him. That's how Rashi understands it. But the Radak seems to understand, no, it's referring to actual Arichas Yomim. But here there's a Tanai, here there's a condition, right? The Osher V'Kavo, that he'll have till he dies. But in terms of Arichas Yomim, there's a condition. What's that condition? Yim Teilech Midracha. You have to follow my ways. And says the Radak, Shlomo did not live very long. He lived only 52 years, he says, which is the same age that Shmuel died, right? So Shlomo died when he was young, when he was 52. And he says, why? Because he had trouble at the end. He wasn't 100% teilech midrachai, right? So that was the condition of arachta yomim. So therefore, he didn't get that 100%. Okay, last pasuk tesvach, ayikat Shlomo, v'yinei chalom. Shlomo wakes up, and behold, this was a dream. Vayavo Yerushalayim, he comes back to Yerushalayim, vayamo lifnei aron brisa Hashem, and he comes and stands in front of the aron, vayal olos, and he brings korbanos. He just brought korbanos and givon. Now he's bringing korbanos in Yerushalayim. Ayash Shlomim, he brings other korbanos. Ayash Mishta, the Chol Avadav. And he makes a tremendous party for all of his servants. Now, Pashup Shat, the Hinei Chalom, he woke up and he realized he had a dream. Right? He realized that he had a dream, but he was still happy. Meaning he recognized, he believed that this dream would come true. And Hashem was going to give him what he promised him in the dream. So although it was a dream, it was very real. In fact, the Radak says, The Metzudah HaStavit said that when he woke up, Hinei Chalom, he realized it was a dream, but it felt like he was awake, like he felt so real. So he kind of had a hunch that this would come true, that this would happen, and that's why he made a party for all of his avadim. But Rashi and the Radak both quote the Medrash that says Hinei Chalom, that all of a sudden when he woke up, he heard the birds chirping, and he understood what they were saying. He heard the dogs barking, and he understood what they were saying. And he says, wow. It's because Baruch Hu granted me the Chachma already. Right? Which, by the way, if you look at the Pesukim earlier, the implication is Hashem says, I did it already. Right? That's the implication of the Pesukim. Pesuk says, Hashem says, V'hinei, in Pesuk, Yud-Gimel. No, in Pesuk Yud-Beis. Hinei asisi kidvarecha. That's Lashon Avar. Hashem did it already. Right? Hinei nasati l'chol leiv chacham v'navan. I did it already. Done. Like you asked for it, done. You have it already. Now that would explain the Medrash that when he woke up, he already understood. He already had the chachma in the middle of the dream. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed this miraculous chachma upon him. He now understood everything and he was able to do it. Oh, okay. I'm sorry? This is not, what, the dream? I don't know. It sounds like nevuah, but I don't know that it was real nevuah, because nevuah is usually something that you're supposed to tell someone else. Like, this is just a private conversation between him and Hashem. So I don't think it was actual nevuah. Presumably, yeah, yeah. I don't think Shlomo was counted as one of the Nevi'im, so I don't think he had nevuah. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. And from next week, we'll learn about the famous story of the two women and the baby.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Good night, Marsh.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Marsh.
Night.